Hey there, Atlanta. We are back in studio recording, and we are so excited because this month, the month of March, is our Trailblazers, Trendsetters, and Trendsetting series. And today we have a trendsetter with us. Erica Mitchell is in the house, y'all, board member from Atlanta Public Schools, and she is going to set us on fire in the next 30 minutes talking to us about what's going on in Atlanta Public Schools and way that she is reimagining the schools out there in Atlanta, and really supporting our kids. So, Erica, I'm so happy to have you. Thank you so much for being here with us and for sharing this space.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Absolutely. So, I know we were talking right before this. We were getting really excited and pumped up. We had some good conversations, but now we get to sort of do it with everyone listening. But I want to formally introduce you. For those that don't know Erica Mitchell, I want to tell you a little bit about her, and then we'll jump into our series, our segment for today. So Erica Mitchell is an influential public servant. She wrote the first school district's minor sex trafficking, trauma-informed practices, restorative justice practice policies. Very impressive. She developed the first electronic newsletter for her district. That's awesome. I'm talking about the trailblazer here. Let's go. Currently serves on the Atlanta Board of Education's Policy Review Committee, Equity Task Force, Audit Committee, and the Board of Directors for the Atlanta Beltline. Currently on the Georgia Statewide Human Trafficking Task Force Work Group, and was appointed by the City of Atlanta Mayor Bottoms to serve on the Atlanta 2020 Census Committee. She also was elected as member of the National School Boards Association Council of Urban Boards of Education Steering Committee, is currently serving as vice chair from 2021, and your term ends in 2023, and I guess you'll be. Are you renewing in that?
No, our state association, which is Georgia School Board Association, pulled away from the National School Board Association, but through their membership, but that's how we became members. And no,
okay, got it.
It was politics, what DC politics, and I got had nothing to do with that.
I got you, but you're doing a whole bunch of other great work. And she also serves as the elected secretary of the National Black Council of School Board Members. We'll get into that today, where she chairs policy and resolution committee for both councils. I'm excited. I just want to talk to you. I'm a policy girl. Okay. I love policy. I love education. I love children. So having you here with your breadth of experience and with your passion for policy and for education, I'm just happy to pick your brain about how did you get started? What was the defining moment for you that got you started into APS?
So before I became a board member, I was working with the NFL Players Association, Metro Atlanta chapter. I was helping I was working for them, and I was actually putting together their initiative, their program. So the NFL Players Association is the union for the NFL. So they have different chapters across the United States. The Atlanta chapter was tasked with, one, raising funds for scholarship awards at the end of the year for graduating high school students with their annual golf tournament. The other one was a literacy initiative, which I built out with my grandma. She would always say, read to succeed.
If you read, you will succeed.
And I never forget that, because I'll tell you this. When we got older, we would go over there for Christmas. And she lived here in the city, but you know, Christmas Day, you always go see your grandparents, right? We think if she's going to give us money, she will always give us a book.
A book. Come on, grandma. Okay. That's right, grandma.
So she would always say, now what did I say? And then we'll be like, if you read, you will succeed. Read to succeed. So that's where it came from. But what I found was, when I was go into the schools, and we would have those professional athletes, retired athletes, some, some current. They would go, we would get their books. If they authored a book, we would have them read their books to the students. For the older students, they do more like speaking engagement, right? So with the younger students, and I'll never forget this, it was in 2017, we were at Boyd Elementary School. And we, Sergio was his name. He went in there, he had a book, he sat down on the floor, he read to the students. And I remember the pre-K teacher said, oh my God, he actually got this child, the particular child she was talking about, to sit down and listen and to want to read a book, because they were kept working with him the whole year. He did not want to pick up a book. He did not want to read a book. Because all the kids were learning how to read. And she was like, he just wouldn't do it. But when Sergio came and sat down and read to the kids at a whole. Uh-huh. He was the first person to pick up a book and walk over there. And she was like, I couldn't believe it. And then we came back and she was like, he is starting to read. He's starting to
pronounce. And I'm thinking, that's powerful.
Like, what did I miss? Right. Like, because I didn't know, like, how impactful it is. And then the other schools that we would have them visit to, we always got a lot of great feedback from the teachers about how it motivates the students. And so I was like, oh, wow. But then on my visits, I was able to see some of the disparities that were in the schools.
Yeah.
And it wasn't the lack of resources. It was the lack of reallocating resources where it needed to be.
Right.
And making sure that the teachers had those supports and resources.
Right.
Because when you look at the schools, especially in certain areas, they don't have a foundation board.
Right.
That if the district don't provide, the foundation will.
Okay.
Some of them just depend solely on the district. So that's what they receive is what they get.
Right.
You know, unless there's some kind of partnership that they try to get. So it hinders them to do more that they possibly could. And so, you know, when I started seeing that in some of the areas that the kids were coming out of and they were going to school every day, you know, but they were persistent and dedicated to go to school every day, regardless of their parents' socioeconomic situation.
Right.
And so that's why I said kids would thrive if you give them an opportunity.
That's right.
And so after just experiencing all of that and like, man, this is great. I can see myself like really helping and you know, bringing partnerships and collaboration and engaging the community. And then the current school board member at the time asked me if I would run for his seat because he wanted to run for commissioner. I was like, I don't want to run for his seat. I mean, he stayed on me from like December until the time it was time to qualify.
It was like
in August.
Destiny.
Yeah, he's like, you gotta run. I'm like, I don't want to run. And I end up running and I won. It was like my first campaign.
Yes.
And I ran it by myself.
Come on, let's go. Okay, well, maybe I'm
supposed to be here, you know?
Right.
And that's why I had to think about it. And then I was like, okay. Yeah, maybe I am supposed to be here.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think this was my path, but this is where I'm supposed to be.
I think that's so profound, and it's like destiny. Everything was lining up for that moment, and even though you weren't looking for the position, you were serving. Your heart, your posture was right, and so when the opportunity came, they were like, "Erica, we already know that you're doing this work. Why don't you do this? Why don't you run and sit in this position?" So they were already believing in you. They had the faith in you.
I had no idea. I was like, what? I don't want to be in politics. I know.
And it's interesting because it's always the people that didn't want, that weren't chosen. And that's what really true politics is, the people choose you. Because it's all about people. But then we made it something else. Talking about politics. What are the politics like in Atlanta public schools? What's going on? What is happening? What are you seeing there?
I always say politics have no place in the schoolhouse.
That's right.
But some kind of way they end up there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I think the politics that are being played with our children are adult outcomes, is what adults want, what they need and what they feel is important to them. Mm. Not what the kids need and what you think is important for the kids, or what the kids telling you is important to them.
Right.
I think it's more so a selfish approach. And I'm not saying everybody in Atlanta Public Schools is that way, but you can see and you can pinpoint, you can identify certain people.
Right.
And they all say they're there for kids, but then if that's the truth, then why are our kids in the situation they're in? And they want to point the finger at the parents all the time. And I don't think you can do that. I think when the child is with you 6 hours out the day, that's your opportunity to pour into that child.
That's right.
Is to serve that child and make sure they have everything they need.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen it be more punitive than more serving.
Tell me more about that. Because you developed this policy and restorative justice practices.
Right.
And I know that's all about restoring kids to be able to overcome whatever they're dealing with. So tell us more about that. How did you start that and what that looks like?
So it was like in 2019, right after I came off the writing the policy for domestic violence and sex trafficking, because we got issue here that people don't want to talk about with human trafficking, okay? I'm just going to say it. Like, last night, I was on the Unholy Tour, where they took us to different sites around Atlanta, Cobb County, and Clayton County, where trafficking was taking place right in front of our eyes.
Are you serious?
Yes. So you can't tell me we don't have a problem. This is the first time I went on that tour, and it was done by Commissioner insurance commissioner for the state of Georgia, Eccles, Commissioner Eccles.
Yes.
And that's what he was pushing. So after coming off of that policy, I was like, okay, I learned two things. What makes a child vulnerable?
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of different things to make a child vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if they one of the things that they identify is behavior problems.
That's
okay.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If a child has experienced some type of trauma,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or mental health issues. Mm-hmm. I don't like to use issues. I just feel like they're having some challenges, right? And so when you look at restorative justice, when I'm seeing disciplinary actions come before me time after time after time, and I have to ask myself, what are we doing to correct this?
That's right.
How are we looking at restorative practices in the school?
That's right.
Because you want to turn around their behavior, mm-hmm. but you want to make sure they're educated enough to make the right decisions about the behavior.
That's
because
right.
here's the thing. Kids come into this world on a clean slate.
That's
Everything
right.
Everything that they do is
they
what
learn.
They learn
That's
and
right.
imitate from adults.
That's right.
So we're
That's
holding right. them accountable for adults' behavior?
Right.
Or we're going to correct them on what they should be doing right mm-hmm. and how they should choose
mm-hmm.
The correct behavior choice.
Right.
Or here's the other thing. Not only choose the right behavior, but how do they process what they're feeling
mm-hmm.
and being able to communicate
That's right.
if they're frustrated,
mm-hmm.
you don't go to violence.
Or hungry.
Uh-huh. Hungry. Yes, all of uh-huh. those things. Mm-hmm. And everything, like I said, everything they do is learned, but they
That's
haven't
right.
been taught
That's right.
how to deal with it.
That's
and so
right.
restorative justice put that conflict resolution,
yes,
making the
yes.
right decision. Let's sit here and talk about it. You have
yes.
a disagreement with this person. We're going to teach you the right way to resolve
That's
it.
That's right.
Not what your mom and daddy do.
That's
or
right.
your sister and brother, whoever.
Come on now.
You know, but
right.
we're going to tell you how you really should truly do
yeah.
that.
Right.
And that's what's that to me is called maturity.
Yes.
That's called growth. That's
yes.
called learning.
Yes.
Because the kids don't have it all.
It's social-emotional learning.
It is.
A child is not just, a child is not academics, right?
Mm-hmm.
A child is a whole person. They have a social part, they have emotional, they have psychological.
Yes, they have all.
They have all these components, and we forget that when they come into the school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love restorative justice practices because it humanizes them, number
That's
one,
right.
and allows them to be children, and then it helps to guide them.
That's right.
That's what education is all about.
That's what it is. And so that's one of the reasons why I say, you know what, if we say we're going to serve kids, let's serve kids.
Right.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's figure out a way
mm-hmm.
that we can reduce the rate of suspension,
right.
but implement restorative
mm-hmm.
justice in the
mm-hmm.
schools
mm-hmm.
so we can start having these conversations so students can start making the right choices.
Right.
Because
right.
at the end of the day, we want to see them reach their full potential.
That's right.
But we have to give them the tools that they need and
That's
the skills
right.
that
That's
they have
right.
to learn. And
yes.
so with trauma-informed policy, I will give a shout-out to Principal Longley at Scott Elementary
okay,
School, and I have to say
principal.
That because he was the first school in our district to become trauma-informed.
Yes,
and I
love
was like,
that.
Wow. And I learned about
that.
The trauma-informed approach when
mm-hmm.
Writing a policy for domestic violence sex trafficking, because you
right.
have to come with a
trauma-informed
approach,
That's
right?
That's right. That's right.
And so we didn't have any schools that had the care systems of care
right.
in place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, Principal Longley had at Scott Elementary because
uh-huh.
he went to apply for the 21st Century Grant.
Right.
And so he was able to staff his school with the right people
right.
to have his systems of care in the school. And
right.
I was just so amazed because he said, this is what our kids need.
Yes.
And I said,
yes.
he gets it. So from there, I learned from him. And then I started looking around the United States and see who was doing
mm-hmm.
what and who wasn't and what, you know.
Right.
And so it was like, well, we can do one here in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And the
mm-mm.
summer we were shut down for the pandemic.
Uh-huh.
Because I had time.
Right. Some time
on
your
those
hand
policies and got them voted on, I think, August or September going into 2020.
Wow.
And so now it's time to implement. If we want to open
wow.
schools, we got to have this support.
That's
because
it.
We knew the issues before the pandemic.
That's right.
So now we're coming
Exasperated.
Back.
Exasperated. That's right. That's
you better
right.
be ready.
Yeah.
Grab the wheel.
Come on. But this is so, I'm over here, I'm just excited because you're speaking my language. This is my love language right here, mental health, trauma-informed care. This is all we preach, all we teach, all we do in iRaise. Everything we do, we go into school systems, we teach principals how to have trauma-informed environments from the child to the teacher to the parent to the security officer to the principal. Everyone learns it. Everyone gets the language and the tools, and we see it as a way of life. But a lot of times in our communities, it's stigmatized.
It is.
For so many reasons.
Mental health was... you know, stereotype is, oh, you're crazy. Everybody have mental health.
That's
right. It's whether you acknowledge it or not.
That's it.
Do you know how to deal with everything that happened in your life? Everything coming for you? You don't. So people just deal with things a little differently. It doesn't mean they're crazy.
Yeah.
But that was a stigma for so long. Mm. And it's, you know, like, boys don't cry. When I was growing up, boys weren't supposed to cry.
Same here.
But boys can cry.
That's right.
Because they have to release those emotions.
That's it.
And not keep it buried inside of them.
And that's why so many are angry. And yeah. Are resorting to violence because they're holding that in. They need to learn what to do with it.
Yep.
They really genuinely need to learn the tools. But I love that you work with social workers, too. You talked about your policy being informed by social workers. It is Social Work Month. Mm-hmm. And so tell me how that relationship looks like when you're working with social workers to get the information and data to inform your policies.
So in our district, it was just interesting that I had friends that were social workers.
Yes, shout out to the friends, social workers.
So I was able to talk to them to kind of get their perception. Like, what can I do to help you do your job?
Yes,
What type of support do you need in the schoolhouse that will help you serve the children better? And they would start opening up, oh, this would be good if we had this, and this would be good if we did this, and blah, blah.
Yes.
I said, oh, okay, let's put pen to paper. Let's see how it looks. And I mean, that's it. Anytime I think about writing a policy, I'm going to go to the person who's on the front line.
That's right.
Because you can't, I feel like you can't write a policy unless you know what's going on.
That's right.
Because educational policies are written to serve. They're not written
Say
to be punitive.
Say that one more time.
They are written to,
serve. Yes.
So you got to think about that. And I learned that at my first conference I went to, which was, in Savannah, the, GSBA, Georgia School Board Association. And this woman was talking, and she was talking about how policy should be written to serve students.
Yes.
And that was just 6 months of me being a board member. And then right after that, I had my visit at juvenile courts.
Right.
Later that month, and that's when I discovered, you know, we had some human trafficking issues in Atlanta. I didn't even know what she was talking about. I was like, what are you talking about?
Wow.
And then she shows me a map of the city, and then I see, like, blue dots in my area. I said, why the blue dots in my district? She said, oh, those are human trafficking cases we have.
Are they raising awareness of this with the students and schools? What are they doing about this?
So the policy was written to educate the staff to identify and to know what this is.
Yes.
The other component, which is the major component, is the prevention through awareness.
That's right.
And that's where it comes with, you have to start teaching the kids about what this is. Because you can be trafficked and not knowing you've been trafficked.
That's
don't even know, because you don't recognize, you don't know what
it
is.
You don't know the science. Right.
And so that's one of the things that I really push on, not just one time a year in January, but all year round. The incorporated, we have it incorporated in our health courses for our seniors, but we got to start earlier than that.
Got to start much earlier
than that. You got to start in elementary school, and I'm going to tell you why.
That's it. You said it.
In 2020, I went to Nigeria, and I met with the head of the human trafficking, I guess task force, they may call it task force, I can't remember, but coalition or whatever they call it for the country. And he says they have their curriculum developed from when they first enter in school, because it's a big problem in Africa and Nigeria.
Wow.
And so those kids are learning about what this is from day one. We're not waiting until you get to
high school.
We're starting you right now.
That's right. You need
and
to
so
learn
so I
signs.
Was like, well, I would love to see a curriculum. We don't have one yet. We just, awareness. Again, this is something a lot of people don't want to talk about.
Right.
But if you know how we have a drug policy, a drug protocol, and a drug curriculum? It's the same thing you can do for human trafficking.
That's right.
And it's about education brings awareness and prevention. You can't, you know, do one without the other. All three
has
to happen. And if...
And there's a reason that a lot of we don't want to put money towards raising awareness. That's a whole nother issue we probably won't touch on right now, but this is connected to a lot of...
Yes.
Yes, a lot of corruption.
It is.
A lot of
corruption. But I will give credit to First Lady Marty Kemp and Attorney General Chris Carr.
Awesome.
Because I've worked with them a lot on the policy that I wrote for a lot of public schools. The resolution I wrote for the National School Board Association.
Excellent.
And now I've wrote a draft bill for the state of Georgia because I would love to see a bill. Well, I have the draft of it, but and it may cross over because I didn't file it because I was still trying to figure. Because I don't do the politics downtown.
Right.
I got you.
So
I was like, I'll get someone to carry it.
Uh-huh.
But it mandates that every school district in the state of Georgia have a policy, a protocol, and a curriculum around human trafficking.
That's right.
And I'll tell you why. Because when I started in 2018, we have 159 counties.
Right.
And at the time, it was 137 counties that had cases of human trafficking.
137.
Now, guess how many it is now?
How many?
158 out of 159.
So now it's increasing. So we essentially, it's almost in every county.
It is in every county. I don't know what that one county, they just haven't reported
it. It needs to be mandated.
And I'll tell you why, because... It again, when you can identify what's going on, that's where the prevention starts. That's where, you know, the opportunity comes to do something about it.
Right, right.
And so that's the thing I think that's happened. I'm not saying that it doesn't exist in all counties in Georgia. I think now people are recognizing it and doing something about it, and it's being reported.
Right.
Versus not doing anything. Oh, we don't have any cases. Well, what is going on?
But you have this bill that you said you're going to be putting in someone's hands. I would love to follow up with you on the bill and where it is and the status of it. But I think mobilizing CBOs and community-based organizations to support your work and what you're doing. Because when we're talking about policy, I love what you said. Policy is meant to serve.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're thinking about how do we create policy, what is effective public policy or effective policy, it's policy that is relevant to what people on the ground are going to be dealing with every day.
Mm-hmm.
So talking to your frontline workers, asking them questions is exactly what an excellent policymaker is supposed to be doing. So it is an example of what we should be doing in the entire state of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm grateful that you're in that position to be able to model. This is how policy works, because a lot of time there's a gap between writing the policy and practice.
Yes. It's like, I noticed that when I came in.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, what are we doing?
Uh-huh.
How we approve a policy and it can't be implemented the correct way in the schools.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Implementation is one of the reasons why policies fail, is because they're not relevant or they don't connect to the people, the constituents that they're supposed to. So there's a lot of issues in public policy and implementing it. So what you're doing is you're closing the gap, because you're making sure that you're talking to the right people on the front line. You in that position, you know what it's like. You've been on the front line. A lot of people in those places of power, unfortunately, they don't know what it's like to be on the front line.
Mm-hmm.
So you're closing the gap. But I'm also thinking about the implementation part, because you have all these great policies that you're creating and that you're drafting. What is it going to look like on the ground? What is the support going to look like? How is it going to be implemented? What are your thoughts about that? I'd love to hear.
So I will tell you what's the domestic violence trafficking policy.
Right.
We actually wrote a protocol because I knew that they wouldn't know what to do with that policy.
Uh-huh.
Because, again, it was something that was not discussed, that was not recognized.
Mm-hmm.
And let me just say this. There, in the whole United States, there was not one policy for human trafficking in school districts, or even domestic violence and trafficking, or child exploitation, whatever you want to call it.
Uh-huh.
Nowhere. What we found is a protocol in San Diego school district.
Okay.
And the protocol was around how do you respond to child exploitation.
Okay.
Get what I mean? So we had to look at that model to see how they had things set up in their protocol. And we customized it to fit what we needed for Atlanta.
Excellent.
And then adding on different components that we needed as well.
Wow. I wonder what it... I think that's so profound, because First of all, I'm very disappointed that New York City doesn't have one. That's one. We need to have a talk with Mayor Eric Adams out there to see what's going mm-hmm. on, and might even encourage him to include that in his new bill he's rolling out for mental health in schools and in mm-hmm. New York City. But I love that you're trailblazing this in Georgia. What would it look like if school districts, and this might be a part of the cohort you're doing, around the world or around at least around the nation came together to co-create and collaborate on these issues?
So that's what the National School Board Association was for mm-hmm. when I chaired policy and resolution. Mm-hmm. Because we, the National School Board Association, I can't remember how many school districts, but they were all urban, well, uh-huh. urban, suburban.
Right.
School districts right. that were part of the school board, that all 50 states
right.
were a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we write the resolutions, mm-hmm. I submitted three. Mm-hmm. All three mm-hmm. was adopted by the General Assembly.
Okay.
The General Assembly is the 50 state associations had to vote on it.
Right.
So in the resolution,
mm-hmm.
it, how can I put it? There's a couple of the components. You in the resolution, it is to address making sure there's awareness, education, mm-hmm. program, funding, mm-hmm. policy.
Right.
Policy is okay. important to Excellent. Come out of that. And right. then you have a area where it urges Congress to act.
Got
so
it.
Now you're asking your Congress to mm-hmm. make sure that there is, that's what's addressed is education, mm-hmm. funding, awareness, mm-hmm. program,
mm-hmm.
programming around it,
right.
and policy.
Right.
So if right. you, I could share with you the national, the resolutions, but if that's the resolution of the National School Board,
uh-huh.
then a local school district say, well, hey, this is what came down from the National School Board Association.
Right. right.
We need to look at, looking at a policy model that we can implement or yes. adopt here. And that's right. what it's supposed to be for. So right. what does that look like? It looks different in every school district.
Right.
Every
right.
school district is unique and have their different
Absolutely.
Areas of concerns they have to right. address. But I could say one thing, if you write a policy to serve children, you're mm-hmm. doing the right thing.
That's right.
Right. So
I love that. It's mm-hmm. I would love to see, and this may be happening or not happening enough of, but more collaboration between government and different municipalities.
Yes.
So whether it's on a federal, state level with school boards working together better, because even what you mentioned, they're putting this to the General Assembly, but urging Congress to act. So there's another piece to mm-hmm. the puzzle. Everyone needs to be working in cohesion
yes.
to make sure this is implemented properly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then also in our policy and our protocol, it allow us to work with our city, our county,
mm-hmm.
our state, and those nonprofit agencies
yes.
or organizations that right. provide support
yeah.
Around human trafficking and the victims.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this is so informative, and I would love to see how IRAs can support more in the school districts, because we're out here. We want to provide.
Mm-hmm.
We want to support our kids. We love our children. I love the work that you're doing. We need good CBOs and nonprofits to undergird the work you're doing mm-hmm. because they work hand in hand.
They do, and they're in the trenches.
Yes.
Who better knows
yes,
than the people who are already doing the work?
That's right.
That's who I go to. I do, and I tell them I'm the parent.
Like, right.
I might be a school board member, but mm-hmm. I'm that black parent. Like
That's right.
they always ask, oh, what, you know, what did the parents say or whatever,
mm-hmm.
Especially mm-hmm. when it comes to the African-American community. I'm
right.
saying, well, I'm that parent. I'm
mm-hmm.
not just sitting on the board just twiddling in my thumbs.
That's
like,
right.
I have kids.
That's right.
I live the day-to-day.
Yes.
So
yes.
you can't take that experience from me.
Mm-mm.
So if I'm making decisions, you better believe it's going to be for all kids.
Come on.
Because my kids are affected. All kids are affected.
That's right.
And that's how I look at it. So I'm not going to vote against children. I'm voting against my kids.
That's right. That's
Let's
right.
just be honest.
That's right.
It doesn't happen.
Mm.
But, you know, I just look at it differently.
Right.
Because maybe because I am a mom.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And some people might not be. But
right.
it's okay. But
right.
you got to look at what are you trying to do? What type of outcome do you want?
Right.
Right. And it's not for everybody, but
mm-hmm.
I mean, and I'm just talking in general,
right.
not identify anyone, but
right.
when you serve in students,
yes.
you have to always have their voice
You got to have their voice in mind. You got to ask the students, what do they need?
That's right.
What can we do that make sure that you're successful?
Do we have any data? Do we have, like, any mental health data on our kids at APS right now on how the pandemic has affected them? Any of that that we've collected that comes directly from them?
It does, because what's happening is now we're doing the assessments.
Okay.
What is normal risk, high risk, elevated risk, so you kind of know what's taking place.
Excellent.
We have Hazel Health, which we just, is telehealth, which we just got. And I'll tell you a little quick story about Hazel Health. In 2019, I was down in Miami-Dade for a school board conference, and I met the owner, not the owner, but I met the one of the developers for Hazel Health. He's also one of the developers for the iCloud.
Wow.
Which is interesting. A lot of people don't know that.
Wow.
So we were sitting in the back of a Suburban. He was just talking about the things that he was doing and how he's pouring so much money into education and to help students. And so we get to the former superintendent cabinet, Alberto Cavallo, who was the former superintendent of Miami-Dade. And so the people from Hazel Health gave us a big presentation. I was like, this is great. This is great. So this is, I want to say it's September 2019. When I got back, I sent it to the former administration we had. And, you know, they're kind of like, well, we don't know. Yeah, okay. I thought it was great. I just want to pass it along. And then pandemic hit.
Right.
So we transitioned superintendents.
That's something.
Yep.
That is something. And, you were ahead of time.
You never know what
you're
doing.
That's what a trailblazer is.
If it's good for kids, let's see how we can make it work. And so it took a couple of, you know, years to get into Atlanta Public Schools, but it's here now. So that's one component of telehealth.
I love it.
Especially when you don't have the in-person support.
Right.
Because if you look at the state ratio for social workers to students, it's like one counselor to every 450 students. That's too much. I mean, that's 450 students.
Can't see all 450 students. And it's very similar. The ratios are very similar in New York. A little higher, though, 1 to 800.
Oh, my God.
We have over 1.3 million kids in our New York City school districts.
Yeah.
But it's not enough. One social worker to 450 students, you can't see them. At iRaise, our ratios are 1 to 50. And even that's a high. And we break them up into small groups so that we tier the kids. So kids that are on the highest tier level, they get the one-on-one services in addition to the group. Some kids may just need group support. Yeah. And so we, you know, there's no way. I can imagine putting 450 kids on one of my social workers. They will literally burn out. It's like, that's why many social workers are leaving schools.
They are.
And going into corporate America because they're burning out.
They're
burning
out.
You, social workers.
We
so please don't abandon our kids. But we are at the end, Erica. I wish I could stay with you for a little longer. We got to bring you back when you're free. I know you're super busy taking care of dad and everything else. So I just thank you for your time. But I want to ask you, what's next? What is your next plan in terms of how do we really help these kids in Atlanta Public Schools? What does that look like for you?
So every day we're doing the work to help our students. The principals are doing the work. I have to sing praise to a lot of principals because they are doing the best that they can do.
And
day in and, you know, just going full speed ahead because they really care about the work.
Yes.
And they care about the students, too. So the principals are the leaders of our school.
I
always try to figure out how can I support them more and how can I always be there for them because trust me, I see their work. I see it every day.
You see your work, principals.
I think with Atlanta Public Schools, it needs to be a community effort.
Yes.
We got to bring back the community in our schools.
Yes.
I think that has been gone for a while. And so when you have a disconnect, you don't have that, what they say, it takes a village.
Right.
You don't have that anymore.
Mm.
And so that's one of the ways that people can support is go back to the local schools in your area.
Right.
Go see how you can help.
Yes.
Go see how you can volunteer.
Yes.
Go see what programs you can be a part of.
Yes.
Come to some games or science fair competitions or be a judge, be a mentor.
I love that.
You got to get back into it.
I was just a few schools in Atlanta Public Schools. I don't know. I was doing some career coaching. And it's so funny because one of the students was calling me off the hook yesterday. And she's like, I need you to send me the link to that course that teach entrepreneurs.
Yes.
Entrepreneur course to high school kids. And We preface the kids in the APS schools. Mm-hmm. And she and I said, I'll send it to you, but I was working. Girl, 3 hours passed. She said, I ain't trying to rush you, Miss Moore, but I need that link. I was like, yes, ma'am. I got you. I'm going to send it
They're ready for it. They're ready for the opportunities. Yes. You never know how you can touch them and how you can change their lives.
Yes.
But you can do it with every little thing that you do. Mm-hmm. I try my best to bring as many partnerships I can to the schools that are in my area, any resources that I can.
Yes.
I just share this because I know you're running tight on time, but when I was told the drug dealers were giving our kids football cleats, I picked up the phone and called a friend of mine. I was like, y'all have any cleats up there? Mm. Talking about the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I need to get some down here to get to these kids. So
that's right.
After all their season, I get all their leftover equipment that they don't use. And I bring it back directly to the students in my area because you shouldn't have to worry about mom can't afford cleats.
That's right.
Or dad can't buy them or drug dealer supplying them.
We're not going to do that. That's right.
We got to take care of our students.
That's right.
So that's just little things that
you're
doing a
great work. You are really a trailblazer, and I am so honored and blessed to have met you. This is the beginning, hopefully, of a partnership. We are here to support you and your work. So if you want to bounce off, I'm a licensed social worker, so if you have questions, you want to bounce off policy ideas with mental health, trauma-informed care education, please count on me as one of your supports. I raise this here, so if you need any assessments, any help, any clinical social workers to support kids in schools, we are here.
That
we are here
good.
For
Thank
you.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I appreciate you so much, Erica.
You're so welcome.
Thank you. And thank you all so much for watching. I'm just so fired up. But I really appreciate this segment with Erica Mitchell, y'all. How can people follow you or get in touch with you?
Okay, so I am on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.
Awesome.
I think all those names except Twitter is Erica Y. Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
No, hold on. No, it's not. See, I forgot. It's Erica, E-R-I-K-A, Y, Mitchell, M-I-T-C-H-E-L-L. That's on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn.
Okay.
And then Twitter is Mitchell4, spelled out F-O-R-5, Mitchell4-5.
Okay, awesome. That was the district that you were in. I got you. I got you. So that's how y'all can reach her, and we'll make sure we put those that information somewhere in the platform that you're watching, whether you're watching from Apple Podcasts, Google, Podbean, we'll make sure, or YouTube, we'll make sure we drop those links below. But we appreciate you so much. Thank you all for listening to our content. Share this message out. Make sure you subscribe so that you can be the first to be notified once a new episode is released. We're excited about our next episode next week. Please stay tuned because we are staying in our Trailblazers, Trendsetters, and Trendsetting series. Happy Social Work Month. Happy Women's History Month. We'll see you soon. Thank you.